Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks. I'm your host, Kara Rhoda.
Before we get started, a quick word from our podcast sponsor. Here's something delicious to sink your teeth into. For just one more day, Smart for Life is offering 10% off their proven weight loss program with code CLEVER. Go to shop.smartforlife.com and use my code CLEVER to shop their wide selection of high-protein cookies, protein bars, shakes, and soups. Change your eating habits for the better with multiple small, nutritious meals a day and lose weight in the process. Again, that's shop.smartforlife.com and my code is CLEVER for 10% off. And now, back to our podcast.
In this special three-part series of podcast episodes, we'll be highlighting the authors of the first few books in a very special new series of cookbooks, the Cookster Classics. Cookster Classics is a series collaboration between Cookster and Picador. It brings to the forefront some of the most beloved cookbooks of the past decades with recipes and techniques that today's chefs continue to draw from again and again. Presenting these beloved enduring titles in their original form with the recipes and headnotes just as they were written decades ago preserves a unique piece of food history while reminding us just how relevant these masterfully crafted cookbooks are to a new generation of home cooks. Our guest today is Samin Rushdie, and in her book, Samin Rushdie's Indian Cookery, Samin takes readers and home cooks on a culinary journey through India, explaining where dishes originate, how to use spices, and balance flavor, color, and texture. Samin first learned to cook from her mother, inheriting family recipes and secret tips that, in the traditional way, were passed down to her orally. She has professionally taught Indian cookery to adult learners, but her greatest pleasure now lies in teaching the next generation from among her close family and friends. She loves the fact that she can break down barriers and simplify the process to suit a modern lifestyle without compromising the authenticity of the cuisine. Samin, thank you so much for joining us today to talk about your book.
Oh, it's really exciting. The whole thing is really exciting that it's coming out, being brought back to life again.
It is exciting. And I know that you've thought a lot about the way that an audience is interpreting Indian cookery now as opposed to when they did when your book first came out. In the book and in your culinary background, you've experienced and cooked through a range of regional Indian cuisines, and you also spent time living and cooking in Pakistan. What are some of the major differences and variations between the cuisines that you uncover?
Kara, you know, you're absolutely right to talk about Indian cuisines in the plural. I guess we're so used to in India, there's so much diversity in everything, in belief, in language, music, dress. There isn't an Indian language or an Indian music. So we're so used to such variation in taste of food as well. And not just regional, north, south, east, or west of the country. The differences could be vary by religious groups. Even different villages and communities can have their own distinctive dishes and flavors of their food. But one thing that I felt was interesting was that we all call the food we cook Indian food, and we refer to all the others by their regional description. So I will call my food Indian food, and I'll talk about other foods as being South Indian or Bengali or Hyderabadi food. A lot of what is thought of as Pakistani cuisine now draws a lot on North Indian Mughlai cooking and also food from the Punjab region, which is a more earthy, rural cooking style. And I think the two have influenced each other, and there is now a distinctive Muslim Pakistani cuisine that is different to the North Indian Delhi Mughlai cooking. And another one of the main differences, I think, is that Pakistanis don't really cook vegetables on their own that much. They love meat, chicken, and fish, and vegetables are often seen as an add-on, as to add additional flavor to a dish. But India has such a large vegetarian offering that it's not surprising so much of the population there don't eat meat.
What were a few of the myths about Indian cooking that you wanted to dispel when you first wrote this book, which I think includes such really great sort of opinionated writing on the experience of Indian cooking in the UK when you were writing it and now in America? And are there other myths or sort of stereotypes that you see now as Indian cooking has become perhaps more mainstream?
I like to think that Indian food is better understood now than it was when I first wrote the book, everywhere really. Although Indian restaurants always tended to do a brisk trade, And they didn't do much to dispel those misconceptions about Indian food being over hot, too spicy, oily, over rich, fatty, difficult and time consuming to cook. Cooking with ready-made curry powders and mixes seemed to some as an easy fix. And to someone like me, that food was just not recognizable. Because I grew up, as you said in your introduction, I was taught how to cook by my mom. And I grew up hearing her saying, hold back, restrain in your use of spices. You have to be able to taste your ingredients, have respect for your fish or meat or vegetables. And the other thing is, I think that traditional Indian cooking always uses fresh ingredients, so it involves making dishes from scratch. So no preservatives, like in the ready mix spice masalas that you might buy or the ready meals you might buy if you made it at home. Another thing I think is that Indian food is very generous to vegetarians, and now so many more people are turning to vegetarianism, and there's such a dazzling array of fresh vegetables and fruit cooked in so many different ways in Indian cookery that helps to retain their freshness and their nutrients. And this, again, was one of the myths that, you know, Indian food kills the ingredients, but that I don't think is true. Also, the use of spices like turmeric, ginger, garlic, green chilies, which apart from seasoning our food, are now recognized for their medicinal and healing properties. I always thought that was important, and so I included a chapter in the book on the value of spices.
Before we continue, a quick word from one of Clever Cookster's podcast sponsors. Are you looking for a breakfast that's worth skipping the snooze button for? Thomas's is the only breakfast brand that delivers a one-of-a-kind eating experience with its original Nooks and Crannies English muffin. There's nothing quite like that Nooks and Crannies texture, perfectly toasted to give you irresistibly crispy edges with a soft, warm center. Take it from a true fan. The secret to revealing that perfect Nooks and Crannies goodness every time is to gently pull your Thomas's English muffin halves apart. You can also use a fork to split them. Just don't use a knife. Next, lightly toast each half and then top them right away with butter. Watch how the butter just melts and pools inside all those amazing little Nooks and Crannies spaces. It's a delicious burst of flavor in every warm, toasty, buttery bite. If you haven't had them already, you have to toast and butter some Thomas's Nooks and Crannies English muffins. They're truly like no other. And now, back to our podcast.
I remember, you know, when I first read the cookbook in its original form, I was really struck by all of the information that was included about the Ayurvedic nature of the spices and things that maybe are not as sort of freely written about in cookbooks even now. Can you talk a little bit more about that and about the sort of connection between the culinary uses of some of these spices and ingredients and the effects that they have and sort of the way that you had thought about that then?
Well, it was very much part of, I mean, like in our home, if we had a cold, my mother would make a little brew, maybe with a bit of turmeric, a bit of raw garlic. Or if we had a stomach upset, she'd use fennel seeds and cardamom pods. And so we were very aware that there were several uses of these spices that were also then used in cooking. And so I was dismayed to see so many, and a lot of the ready-made spice mixes, they add artificial colors. I think they stint on using the really pure spices, some of which can be a little pricey. And so I thought that was important because it was, I don't know, it's just relevant, particularly the big rant that I had in the book was about the spice that a lot of people have heard about called garam masala, which is really awful, the ready packeted garam masala. And actually, the spices that go to make up that spice mix are some of the most wondrous spices in the Indian cooking repertoire. You have small and large cardamoms, the pure black cumin seeds, cinnamon, pepper, cloves, nutmeg, mace, bay. But it's just the balance of using them so carefully, so gently, that's so important. So I did put in my own recipe for that mix, which actually lifts a lot of dishes into being something really special if it's used well.
I really loved your description of the verbal recipe guidelines that your mother would give you before putting you in charge of cooking while she went away and traveled. And you write that Indian cooks rarely cook from cookbooks, as many of us don't when we're cooking the foods that we learned how to cook by feel and grew up eating. How did you translate the dishes that you knew so well into such precise and accessible written recipes that could be made by someone who is cooking them for the first time?
I'm really delighted that you think the recipes are precise and accessible. I did try, but I tried where appropriate to describe a cooking process in a way that involves the cook looking at the food they're making and engaging with it, rather than just blindly weighing and measuring. I think this is really important because there are so many variables in what can happen in the quality of your meat or in the quality of the vegetables, and I have tried along the way to include some useful hints, like the ones my mother would give me about not just about what to do, but how to do it and why and what to look for and what a different stage might look like if it was going well. I just thought a cookery book should be like that, sort of passing on that same oral tradition, not just a collection of recipes. My mother's kitchen didn't have any weights and measures. Or any exact timing. So everything was about do this, and when it looks like this, then you move on to doing this. So I think better imagined as a friendly guide, sharing tips and pitfalls that you might look out for. And a good example of this would be the recipe that I have in my book for plain boiled rice, the most common staple on an Indian table, and yet one people find so hard to get right by following an exact measure of so much rice, so much water. I believe the method I suggest is foolproof because it suggests what people should look for at the stage to know when their rice would be perfect. Indians certainly judge a good cook by the person whose rice is perfect on the table. So perhaps that's why I use rice as an example.
Can you talk a little bit more about the impact that you hope this book will have on a new generation of home cooks?
I think there is a real shift. I think there's a real renewed appetite amongst the younger generation to cook food at home. There's an increased consciousness of cooking fresh and not just buying ready meals and cooking healthily. And I think that Indian food fits into that. There are also a younger generation of people of Indian descent who are connecting back to the food that they ate maybe in their parents' homes or their grandparents' homes. They don't readily always have access to that oral input. I was certainly very aware of leaving a book from which my daughters would not lose our family traditions of food, because at the stage when I was writing it, they were just, one of them was just tiny. But even now, I just think, okay, that's great, because when they want to cook Indian food, they can reach for a book, because the way all our lives are now, there isn't really that kind of time. Mum isn't always in the kitchen. And so a book's a really handy way of passing that down.
Samin, it's such a beautiful book, and I'm so pleased to see it out in the world in its new edition, out now from Picador, Samin Rushdie's Indian Cookery. So thank you so much for coming to speak with us today.
Oh, thank you for having me, and thank you for publishing my book.
Check out the book, Samin Rushdie's Indian Cookery, and tune in next time on The Clever Cookster, your ultimate window into the kitchens of the world's best cooks.